You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans, the daily podcast covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Pelicans and NBA as a whole, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day, available on iTunes and wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, an editor over at LockedOnPelicans.com, former writer for BourbonStreetShots.com, as well as credentialed media member with the New Orleans Pelicans for the past number of years. I've been doing this overall for almost going on like 7 or 8 seasons now. Here with you all on this Monday in what's kind of a weird day here in New Orleans, day after that awful ending to the Saints-Vikings game, and what I think basically has the city in just one giant collective hangover with no one wanting to do any work whatsoever. But we're actually going to talk about that game a little bit here on the podcast at some point, not sure if it'll be in the beginning or the end, as well as covering the Pelicans going 2-0 over the weekend, jumping up to 6th place in the Western Conference. And needing those victories too, and showing a little more fight than we've seen from them in both of those games over the past couple, then over the past couple as well. So we'll talk about those, and then I want to talk about, after we talk about the Saints loss here a little bit, what does this mean for the Pelicans franchise? And I'll explain what I mean and what that has to do with Mickey Loomis and ownership here and all of that. But that is certainly something to, I don't know, maybe keep an eye on or keep in the back of your mind when it comes to certain things. Because there are some kind of implications here and things I've been hearing behind the scenes. So we'll cover all of that and more in today's edition of Locked On Pelicans. So that ending was just brutal. There's really no other way to put it. The Times-Picayune did a good job with their headline today of expletive, expletive, expletive on the front page, which was actually like they've been killing it kind of with the cover game recently here. Brutal loss. This reminds me a little bit of the Pelican stuff here when it comes to, though, expectations and how you try and measure things. And, you know, what I've been trying to stress over the past couple of weeks here on the podcast, that expectations aren't set in stone and they can change, you know, go higher than what you might have benchmarked them at, or potentially become lower as you start to see things develop. And this Saints team was basically projected to go 7-9 again, and they did not, and made it this far into the playoffs to the divisional round after beating the Panthers in the wild card round. And I know a lot of people are being like, this team was fun, this isn't as disappointing because this team shouldn't have been there, they weren't expected to be there. Around the middle of the season, people started to expect this team to go kind of far in the playoffs, and that's why this loss stings. It doesn't hurt otherwise, and, you know, in my opinion, fans should be kind of upset by this. You had a very good chance to win. You had a bigger window this year to try and win or make the Super Bowl when you had to go through Case Keenum and Nick Foles instead of, you know, any other quarterbacks, basically, in the NFC. And it's just, this is a very disappointing loss as a somewhat Saints fan. You guys know it's the Colts first and foremost, but I root for the Saints big time. I'm still wearing my Saints polo that I wore out for the game yesterday right now. That's the state I'm in the next day after the game. But it's disappointing because this team shouldn't have still had the preseason expectations on them. The defense played incredibly well. They got tremendous contributions from rookies, including one of them, Marcus Williams, who didn't make the play at the end, and that is just brutal. I think that, I know people are trying to break down, like, what was he thinking, what's he doing, and really, ultimately, you just got to ask him, and he talked about it after the game yesterday, but, you know, this is one of those things where I think you see it now more than in years past, where a lot of players don't tackle nearly as well. You don't wrap up, you don't, you know, kind of pull and get people to the ground, you kind of hit them with your shoulder, knock them down that way, and it seems like he's kind of trying to do that in that play a little bit as well, as having the refs call like every pass interference call going against the Saints, even when it maybe was offensive at times on the Vikings or shouldn't have been called at all. The Saints got on the bad end of that, and I think that got in his mind a little bit too. It did look like he got to the spot a little bit earlier, a little bit too early, which in and of itself is a mistake. And then tried to have to pull up a little bit to prevent himself from making kind of that early contact, which would have given him PI and then another chance with an almost untimed down, but another play or two at that point. But still, that would have been better than what the end result was. And so this is very disappointing. And this one should sting. And I said on Twitter last night, I think this is a little bit of karma for all the 28-3 jokes. You know, Saints fans have been in kind of bad shape the past couple of years, 3-7-9 seasons, and looking for some joy in football. And 3-7-9 seasons certainly isn't it. We're really hanging their hat on the 28-3. It's kind of come full circle, and this one's a little bit of karma. And look, I thought the joke started to get stale about like 6 months ago. After a while, like banners over Atlanta, while funny, there's no real reason to do that because it's not like the Saints beat them to cause that. And I'm not a huge, huge fan of taking joy from others' miseries personally. But hey, you're allowed to do what you guys want to do. But the jokes were funny. But I think this definitely puts that nail in the coffin, and they need to stop. The Saints caught it on the kind of receiving end of that, and I'm sure we're going to hear it from Falcons fans for the next year, and that's brutal and not something anyone really wants to go through. But so those are my thoughts, just kind of ranting a little bit here about the Saints game yesterday. I figure it's topical. Also, I don't know if there is a Locked On Saints podcast, so you get your little bit of a fix in this way, though. Of course, anywhere you turn, they're going to be talking about the game today. But what's this mean for the Pelicans? And I'm going to talk about that in the next segment here, because there is something that this ties in, and it goes back to like a long-running joke almost, but you know, there is truth to this, and I'm going to explain what that is and why it's kind of important for the Pelicans right after the reset here. Don't forget, check out LockedOnPelicans.com, where we've got new coverage every day about your favorite team, the New Orleans Pelicans. We have a question of the week every Friday where we do a round table with answers from the different writers on there, with the most recent question being, how would you grade the Pelicans at midseason? That Portland game was exactly halfway through the season. What do people think? How does it tie into their expectations? Go check it out over at LockedOnPelicans.com. So with the Saints' loss, more eyes turn towards the Pelicans here in New Orleans than have been on the team all season. And that means watchful eyes from ownership and the team president in Tom Benson and Mickey Loomis. And look, they know they have a basketball team in the city that they also own. But you're kidding yourself if you don't think that the Saints aren't more important to them. And during a Saints playoff run, if that's not the priority versus trying to look at the Pelicans and what they need to do there. 100% that is the case. I tweeted last night as a joke, but it's only partially a joke, and I find it funny because there is some truth to it, that Alvin Gentry was the biggest Saints fan because every game they won was a week that he didn't really need to look over his shoulder and be worried about maybe his job security. Same thing goes for Dell Demps. And now the Saints season over, those eyes and that intense gaze is going to be a whole lot more on the Pelicans head coach. And I'm not saying this just by speculating. This is coming from a lot of rumors from people I've spoken to with the team. Whether they're joking or not, again, there's some degree of truth to it. And people I've had conversations with definitely have said Loomis doesn't pay attention to this team nearly to the degree that he should. Same thing for Benson. But Loomis is really basically at this point the mouthpiece for ownership. And this, and the media knows this too. I can tell you, I've talked to multiple people at different outlets who've kind of said the same thing as the feeling they get from this franchise, that, hey, you know, the ownership's not fully invested in this or paying as much attention as they should. And it's the cold, hard facts. When Benson bought the team, there were clear pros and cons about what the state of the franchise might end up becoming. The pros being, hey, they're here in New Orleans and you don't need to worry about the team leaving. And frankly, I really don't. I think, you know, with the ownership situation kind of the lawsuits with his heirs and the kind of the faction struggling for maybe control of the franchise after Benson's death, I think it's safe here. And that's, again, based off people I've talked to, the feeling I get from the conversations I've had might change in the future. And certainly you have to figure his heirs are going to re-sue for control of the team once he passes, because that will then, and everything kind of goes away-ish, and you can kind of open up the succession and different things, and it's going to end up getting uglier again at some point in the future is my understanding of it. But the future of the team here seems very secure. I don't really have worries about them moving to Seattle or anything like that. I think the NBA doesn't even want a franchise to move. So there's also that. But the downsides to the team were also very clear. Frankly, that maybe, again, the Saints were the number one priority, and then the joke became that the horses that Benson owns were the number two priority, with the Pelicans being number three. And that is somewhat true. Look, Benson isn't cheap in the way that people like to make him out to be. And he is willing to spend, but you either need to be winning for him to spend money, or you need to come with a very good reason and basically like back up the claims for why you need money for whatever it is. And you saw it with the training facility that they built, a practice facility for the Pelicans that cost about $15 million. He spent money there. But when it comes to free agents or, you know, the buyouts or waiving a player or anything like that, and just eating that money, you better come with an amazing argument to them for it. And that's something the Pelicans haven't really been able to kind of get behind and do, because they're not winning games. And at a certain point, ownership's going to be kind of fed up with this. And I think this is where, again, why Gentry wanted the Saints to keep winning, to keep kind of that pressure off of his back. This team has underperformed. I don't care that they're in the sixth seed right now. I think everyone's kind of disappointed in this team, which is weird for a 22-20 team. As I said in the opening with the Saints stuff, expectations change as the season goes on. And to me, they have for the Pelicans. And I think to most fans, they have for the Pelicans. And you guys can let me know on Twitter at NolaJake or at LockedOnPels if they haven't. I'm kind of curious to hear what you guys say when it comes to this sort of thing. But to me, the expectations have changed once we saw what this team is capable of. And Gentry isn't getting that out of them consistently. And yes, it is a coach's job to get that out of them consistently, which comes with motivating players. And I've heard at different times throughout his tenure here that the team's tuned him out. Again, don't know for sure. But these are the things you hear. And you've got to wonder if now, you know, Loomis is going to be paying a little bit more attention to this team, see that the fan base at times is ready to revolt against the franchise, and maybe end up making a decision on what to do about the coach that way. I've said I'm kind of in favor at this point of removing Gentry and just doing something to shake up the team, though maybe we need to wait another 10 games or so before it hits that point. Or if they keep winning and it looks like he saved his job. And certainly if he coaches well, he will save his job. And if he gets these guys to buy in, as we saw from Davis these past two nights, which was a little bit different than what we've seen from him, it certainly should save his job. And I don't know if the Pelicans really want to fire a coach midseason and then have to pay them along with another coach and go through that whole process. So that's where we stand. But I do think the Saints season ending does have an impact on the Pelicans in that way that, yeah, you know, people who've been calling for Gentry, there hasn't been any moves made or anything like that, may start to realize that the franchise is paying more attention to itself now, and that could lead to some shakeups potentially down the line. So I'm going to plug this like I did all last week, and that is make sure you tune into the Locked On NBA podcast, once a week podcast, giving you insights you're not going to get anywhere else. This past week, David Locke had Ben Falk of CleaningTheGlass.com on there talking about the way he uses analytics. This is a guy who worked formerly in a front office of a team, has his own site using his own kind of proprietary stats, and it's a very interesting look, again, at how advanced stats influence the NBA in different ways to kind of apply them to practical research. So tune in to the Locked On NBA podcast. So the Pelicans went 2-0 over the weekend, bumping their record up to 22-22 games above 500, moving in the right direction. And this puts them at 6th in the Western Conference, and actually only one game in the win column behind OKC, who's 23-20 for the 5th seed. Of course, the Pels are also only one game ahead of the Clippers for the 9th seed, showing you how tight that 5, 6, 7, 8th, 9th spot in the Western Conference has become. The Clippers, despite all of the injuries they've been having, have been playing some incredible basketball recently. So it's still very tight. And again, just because the Pels are 6th today, they could easily be 9th in a day or so, basically, depending on how things go. So it's a temporary 6 right now. But hey, you still got to get there and win your games to do that. And the Pels did so in very good fashion, kind of, against the Portland Trail Blazers on Friday, a 119-113 win, where the Pelicans did what they wanted, 62 points in the paint. They had more turnovers than you to, like 18 overall, led to 28 turnover points for Portland. And that's how the Pels, who had a 16-point lead, let it basically get erased. And this became a close game in the third quarter. Pels, who were up at one point big, like I said, 16, ended up going into the half tied at 61-61, showing those defensive issues are still there. But late in the fourth, Anthony Davis absolutely dominated and refused to lose this game. On the night, he had 36 points, 9 rebounds. Cousins, we'll just go through them, had 24 points, 19 boards. And Drew Holiday, who had kind of a quiet night or a couple of games previously to this, came out absolutely firing en route to 16 points, with Darius Miller giving you 25 points for Holiday, 16 for Miller off the bench. But the fourth quarter, Davis showed he didn't want to lose. And this is kind of what you've wanted to see out of him all year, that killer instinct that he hasn't necessarily had. In the fourth, he was 7 for 8 for 16 points and 3 rebounds, doing what needed to be done. They basically just got him the ball and let him do work. This is a guy who said recently, winning's all that matters to him. This is the most important thing. And he still kind of just is like, okay, whatever. We lost the other night. No big deal. Not okay, basically. You've got to be a leader for this team in some capacity. You don't want to do it vocally. Do it by going out there and playing like you did the other night against the Portland Trail Blazers. So that good energy, despite making the usual mistakes the Pelicans do, ended up with a win, and they kind of followed up the similar approach to the game on Sunday during the Saints game, so I'm sure everyone watched this. And Scott Kushner over at The Advocate has a fun article about this, being like, what do you do when this is the situation? The answer is, you watch the Saints in the playoffs, though kind of that ending was so disappointing, maybe you wish you didn't. But the Pelicans traveled to New York to take on the Knicks in Madison Square Garden and came out with a 123-118 win in overtime. Pelicans got off to one of their kind of very usual slow starts that we've seen multiple times that almost buries the team by scoring just 13 points in the first quarter. The Pelicans were actually down by as many as 19 in the third quarter before really starting to go on a run and really take over in the fourth quarter. And Anthony Davis said after the game, the guys battled. They had, 19 turnovers on the night, leading to 22 turnover points for the Knicks. The Pelicans weren't shooting well. There's no other way around this, at least early on, and they struggled again before really kind of coming alive a little bit later. But they did shoot under 29%, 28.1% from three on the night. DeMarcus Cousins wasn't having anything, falling 4 of 16 on the night, 0 for 5 from 3, but he finished with a total of 15 points and grabbed 16 rebounds to go along with 7 steals. Simply put, he was locked in and engaged, and he showed you the effort he can make on defense and why he can be so good and why this team can be so good and fearsome at times. Davis, again, in the overtime, dominated, did what he did against Portland the other night. 48 points, 17 boards. This guy looks right now over these past two games like he's sick and tired of losing. I don't know if that's him doing it. I don't know if that's Gentry getting to him, but something has woken him up. And Holiday, by the way, had an insanely efficient night of 31 points on 19 shots, 3 of 7 from deep, got to the line 5 times, which is like very high for him. 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals. Kind of was getting close to, a 30 and 5-5-5 night. And frankly, he had 4 turnovers, so maybe he could have gotten there, gotten a 5-5-5-5-5, whatever it is, 5-by-5 game with those. But this team's starting to play well, and when their big three of those guys are really contributing, you can get away with not having very much production from the bench, which this Pelicans team really isn't. And if you check out over at LockedOnPelicans.com today, I've got a mailbag I'm going to be answering. It should be posted probably an hour after the podcast is up, answering some of these questions, because this bench is not giving them a lot of production. You don't need them to when you're this top heavy, but you do need to maybe look on the trade market for something. I'm going to talk about what that is at some point in that mailbag, and maybe talk a bit more about it on tomorrow's podcast. So that's going to do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Two good wins for the Pels, putting them at 6 in the Western Conference. And we've said, when this team tries hard and is dialed in, they will beat teams that they're better than, which they don't do enough, and that is an issue. But now there's more pressure on this team than ever before, with the Saints being out of the playoffs, and more eyes and kind of that watchful gaze of ownership kind of shifting its way towards the Pelican side of the airline drive. So they need to keep this up as well. Tomorrow, I believe they take on the Celtics. We'll preview that game in tomorrow's podcast for you. Preview all the games this upcoming week. Talk about other different topics. Ian Clark's definitely going to be one as well because he's been playing well and is back in the Pelicans rotation. Exactly what they probably need because point guard play, particularly from Rondo and Jameer Nelson, has been really, really rough recently. So we'll talk about his resurgence, how important he is to the Pelicans going forward over the rest of the week. So thank you all for listening. As always, I'm your host, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter. I'll be back with you all tomorrow.